what's been interesting is that these candidates are being asked specific questions like, why is diversity important? Being asked questions about their race when really all candidates should be asked those questions.
I'm always an optimist. I think because there's so many open races this time, I think we do have a real, real shot at gender parity for the first time since 1989.
It was a piece of history that I knew nothing about, like absolutely nothing. And being a bit of a municipal politics nerd myself, I was like so eager to jump in with both feet.
Hello, my name is Olivia Beauty. Welcome to Searching for Izina, on Womanly Stories of Female Leadership at Edmonton City Hall, brought to you by YWCA Edmonton, Parity YEG, and several past and present Edmonton City Councillors. 100 years ago, on December 12, 1921, Edmonton elected its first female councillor, Izina Ross. Over the past century, only 30 women have followed in her footsteps, including me. This 9-part podcast, generously sponsored by the Edmund Community Foundation, will tell that wildly incomplete chapter of our city's history, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You will get to meet the 31 female councillors and learn more about why they ran and how they shaped our city. And there are still barriers that need to be broken, even in 2021. Now, let's get started.
Welcome to episode 9 of Searching for Izina, on Womanly Stories of Female Leadership at Edmonton City Hall. I am your guest host today, Catherine O'Neill. I'm also the co-chair of the Searching for Izina, and I'm joined today by Raja McGay, who's also my co-chair of the Searching for Izina project. And we're also really excited today because we are going to be joined by our producer, Samuel G. Brooks, who has been with us from the very start of this project. Welcome, Samuel. You are one of the, you know, maybe six, maybe five men who have been on our podcast.
I was going to say, it's like aside from the family stories episode, I think I'm the only male voice that has been on here. And I've been in the room when we've been doing all the recordings. So it's been pretty special for me. And you're giving me the full name treatment right off the bat there.
I am. It's very important. You have been with us from the beginning. What's it been like since we started in January to be part of this project?
It's interesting because, you know, I was kind of parachuted into this. I mean, I think Searching for Izina was a little bit baked before I came on board, at least conceptually, and just by nature of having access to a recording studio and being friendly with the organization, I kind of got springboarded into this, and it was a piece of history that I knew nothing about, like absolutely nothing. And being a bit of a municipal politics nerd myself, I was like so eager to jump in with both feet and learn about, you know, the trials and tribulations of women and quite frankly other marginalized individuals that have been part of or trying to be part of Edmonton City Council over the last 100 years. So for me, it's just been this weird journey. It's been this, you know, sort of fascinating story, going way back to the deep history. I mean, I think that probably one of my favorite moments was in episode 2 when Paula Simons was telling the story of Margaret Crang.
Yes.
Who's a person that I like want to hang out with after hearing her
we
story.
All do. We all want the Margaret Crang movie for sure. Well, thank you for being part of this project.
It's been an honor.
Thank you. And just as a recap for our listeners, this will be part 9. And part 9 is we're going to be looking at the 2021 election. We're in a municipal election year. It's 100 years of female leadership at Edmonton City Hall. We've had lots of successes, but we still have a long way to go. We've never had a racialized woman on council. We've never had an Indigenous woman on council. We've only had one female mayor. And we've had 31 women serve in total. And that's out of, you know, and when you compare that to our male counterparts, there's been 238 men who have served on our council. So a long way to go. And I'm glad that, as you know, the YWCA Edmonton, which I'm the CEO of, and Parity YEG, and Raja is part of Parity Egg, have gathered to do this project, to shine a very bright light on this part of our history, and to not only tell the stories of the women who have led at Edmonton City Hall, but the women who have yet to lead at Edmonton City Hall, and the women who have tried to be part of our leadership of our city, because it's really important to have parity. And parity means that we have a better community and that everyone's involved and that we are ensuring that everyone's at the table making these important decisions. So we're hoping that on this episode, we talk about this election, we give you a guide to who's running, to who has stepped up and wants to lead the city. And so Raja, over to you. I want to talk to you. You have gathered Parity Egg. So exciting has been tracking the stats. They've been looking at since January, who is registered to vote. Nomination day was in earlier this week in September, recording on September 24th. So who's registered? Give us some of the information about what we're seeing as we head to the polls on October 18th.
Yeah, so this is, you know, fresh off the press. Nice. We have 113 candidates, but we have about 28 female candidates, 85 of them are men, and 10 of those female candidates are BIPOC women. So this is actually a historic number of women who have decided to run for city council. 2017.
But only 28? Seriously? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I think it's like a big celebration to think about all the women who are running, all the racialized women who have put their hat in the ring. But it also makes you think there should be more.
Why do you think there aren't more women running? What are some of the reasons that you look at and you say this might explain this?
I was talking to a female candidate in the area of O'Damon, and she said it was really hard when she was deciding to run because someone said there was already a female candidate in the area. Why are you deciding to run? So I think that's kind of a barrier when there's two very qualified women, maybe even more, trying to see who should run or who shouldn't. Try and get strategic about it, but when really in reality they all should be running and yes. They all should be giving it a fair shot. And this campaign season has been very long. The process is long. The campaign trail is hard. And right now with COVID, it is incredibly hard to engage in the ways that candidates used to, especially when it comes to door knocking or doing events or doing any sort of other outreach that isn't social media. And I think the strain has been hard not just on candidates but also on residents. There's serious election fatigue following the federal election, and I think people are feeling very burnt out, very tired when it comes to politics, very cynical and apathetic. So it's hard for candidates to kind of get people engaged and to get people excited.
It's really kind of frustrating how you talk about, you know, the trivialization and the oh, we've already got a woman candidate in this ward. Why are you running in it? It further cements that real us against them mentality. I mean, nobody complains when there's 20 men running in one ward. You know what I mean? It's like they're just like, okay, this is gonna be a good fight. They're all gonna compete against themselves. Let's see how this shakes out. And we don't afford that same line of support to the women that are running.
Yeah. You said COVID. I mean, COVID, it's not a normal election. It's hard to door knock. It's hard to contact. If you're running against an incumbent, it is an extra hill to climb because of COVID. So I can't even imagine just not only COVID, but then the fundraising. You've got this longer runway than we've ever had before because people have had to start earlier, which is really unfortunate. How do we compare to, say, Calgary? Are we in line with, you know, we have 28 women running here, which is a record, even though there are 113 people running. Let's just remember these numbers. Keep writing these numbers down, folks, because I think it really shows the amount of progress left to do. But are we better than Calgary? We're always like, are we better? Are we worse? How are we doing?
I don't know if we're better. but just to keep this in mind, Calgary has 14 wards, whereas we have 12. Calgary has 31 female candidates and 10 BIPOC female candidates as well. So pretty equal.
Pretty equal. Yeah.
Not really cutting up ahead, but
yeah, if you break it down to like number of candidates per ward averaged out, Edmonton slightly got an edge on that one.
Proportionally.
And we're heading into this election with 31 women to 31 women. And Calgary's never had a female mayor. So it's pretty neck and neck as far as parity, and just shows the fact that no matter where you live, that gender parity has a long way to go. Let's start diving into the races, because I think it's really important. If you're going to learn anything during this episode, who's running? We're going to talk about ward races. We're also going to talk about the mayor's race. So let's start with the mayor's race. Give us the facts, Raja, of the candidates. How many are female? Who's running? Tell us who's... give us an update on what's happening with that race.
Yeah. So there's four female candidates. We have Cheryl Watson, Diana Steele, Kim Crichel, and Vanessa Denman. Vanessa Denman, I think she's quite new to the race, but we've seen Kim Crichel before. She's a former city councilor. Diana Steele.
Three term, by the way. Wow. She was on council and worked for a councillor before she became a councillor. So she's been around City Hall for a long time.
Yeah. And then we have Diana Steele, who is, I believe, the president of the Crestwood Community League. So she's been around her community a lot. Cheryl Watson, again, very influential, especially in the downtown business community, and has just been around the community a lot as well. So It's really interesting to see these female candidates come up and really give the rest of the mayoral race a good run for their money.
Yeah. And looking back to the history, again, we've only ever had one female mayor in the entire history of Edmonton. That, again, is Jan Reimer. If you go back to podcast episode 3, we interviewed her about her time as mayor. That was in 1989, folks. So where were you in 1989?
I was just born.
Okay, where were you, Raja? You weren't even thought of at that time.
Yeah, I don't think I was even a thought in my parents' mind yet. I don't even think my brother was born yet. So
yeah. Oh, wow. I feel really old.
I'm so sorry.
That makes me feel old. But
this is actually a fun fact. This municipal election is the first one I can actually vote in.
Wow, what? Raja. Jeez, Louise.
Yeah, in 2017, I was 17 and graduating high school. All
right. So Raja's a first-time voter. So this is great. But that just shows you know, 1989, we have not elected. And she was a two-term mayor, and she was a councillor before that. But it's a long time since we've had a female leader of our city. Jan did a lot of things when she was mayor. She talked a lot about the environment, recycling. She did a lot of incredible things. And I was really proud to do that podcast, because I think as a city, you move on so quickly and you kind of don't look back sometimes. And we were able to kind of capture some of those moments of the early 90s and what it was like to be in Edmonton. It was a really interesting time. And there was a lot of misogyny and sexism. And I don't think that's changed a lot, unfortunately. I think we still hear that, Raja, for sure, about the fact that all female candidates, no matter who you are, no matter what office you're running for, you face misogyny, sexism, that, you know, how dare you run for public office, which is incredible to think in 2021. Why do you think that's still an issue for a lot of these female candidates?
Luckily, it's not so much at the doors, you know, if you're with the candidate, hopefully no one says something to your face. But on social media, a lot people are hiding behind the anonymity. They feel this urge to just comment on everything.
Courage to do this. Yeah, I know. It's weird.
As if they're the hero of the story when really they're just being incredibly cruel to these female candidates who are putting their all into their campaign.
And it's so unfortunate, because I think it does turn a lot of women off of thinking, I want to run. They just look at it and think, that's an ugly place to be. I don't know if I want to put myself out there. So it's, you know, we heard that a lot in even 1989. We're still here in 2021. It's a long way to go. And hopefully we can keep shining the brightest light possible on it and just telling women, we need you in this space. We need you to be part at the table. And as a community, we need to recognize this is a problem. So the mayor's race, really interesting. That is going to be, because we've had our incumbent mayor, Don Iveson, step aside, this is an open race. I think it's going to be incredibly exciting. And the fact that we have four women running is really exciting. And one other tidbit that you would have learned if you'd listened along to the podcast was that the very first woman to ever run for mayor in our city was 1925, which I think is incredible. That stat was dug up by Lisa Holmes, who's part of the Searching for Izina project. And the fact that, you know, since 1925, women have been running in our city, and we still have only had ever had one in the mayor's chair. It says a lot.
You know, I'm actually kind of glad that you brought up Lisa, because I was going to mention it was in our last episode. One of the things that Lisa really touched on is that a lot of women feel like they have to take stepping stones to get up to the mayor's chair. You have to be a counselor first. You have to be a community organizer. Like, even when we were just running through the mayoral candidates here, we were talking about their credentials, their places in the community. I'm not necessarily sure we afforded the same thing to men, as Lisa sort of pointed out, is, you know, even when you talk about Jan Reimer, we qualify it with, yeah, and she was a two-term counselor before that. Like, you know, part of me thinks that that's great to sort of show off their CV, show off their experience, show off their civic engagement. But the other part of me is like, why do we need that qualifier?
Yeah. Well, and it just shows, yeah, I agree with you, Sam. It's, I think we do it for all politicians, but I think we need to, like, I really hope if you're listening along today that you do your own research. This is, all of these candidates will have websites, and that you go and do your research and you kind of look, and that at the end of the day, and we'll talk about this later because we have a few calls to action for our mm-hmm. listeners, but really supporting, if you find a female candidate particularly that you want to support, they need your help. And there's lots of ways to do that. And we'll talk about that later. So on to our next, we're going to start going through ward by ward, because we want, again, being a guide, we want to talk through who's running and talk about the wards. And an exciting thing, and this is the very first election that we've seen this, is that the city has adopted Indigenous names for all of the wards. And it was after months of consultation with a group of Indigenous women in our city to rename the wards. And so thanks, Sam has brought up, we've gone to the city of Edmonton and we've got each ward, and we're going to go through each ward's name. We're going to give you the pronouncers, and then we're going to talk about who's running. Raja will tell us who's running, and then we'll talk about the race. So let's start with our very first ward.
So one of the things, before we jump into that, I think it's interesting that you touched on the fact that it was a group of 17 women that did this.
Yes.
And I think part of that is a little bit of a nod to much, or at least Indigenous culture around this part of the planet, is a matriarchal society.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's part of the reason why women representing a lot of the different First Nations around here were chosen to be part of the naming process.
Yeah, and I absolutely love these names. They're so meaningful, and I know that for some folks they're learning to pronounce them, but once you get the hang of them, it's a pretty cool idea, and I think it's something we should all embrace.
So the first word that we're going to talk about, and I actually have, the city of Edmonton has pronunciation guides with audio recordings on their website. So you can go in and you can actually learn. There's a primer on every single word, including the origin of the name, how they came up with it, and you can learn how to pronounce them properly, which is very cool. So we are going to start with Nakota Iska, which sounds like this.
Nakota Iska.
So Raja, tell us, are there female candidates in this ward?
There are zero. Incredibly disappointing, since that is the only ward that does not have a female candidate. We have incumbent Andrew Knack running again, and two other male candidates. We've got Steve Weston and David Olivier, but not too exciting in terms of additional representation in that ward.
So let's move on quickly to our second ward. And you know what? The good news, though, is that's the only ward where we do not have female candidates.
That is true.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Next one is where I live. It's Inilnik.
Inilnik.
So Sam, which neighborhoods are these? Let's describe to listeners where this is.
So if you're looking at it, it's formerly what would have been Ward 2. So it's basically the area of the city that's kind of a little slice just sort of northwest of downtown, going north from there.
Okay.
Bev Esslinger is the incumbent there, okay. One of the only two females currently sitting on city council.
So Raja, tell us about this ward and who's running, which female candidates are running in this ward.
Yeah, so as Sam mentioned, we have incumbent Bev Esslinger, and we also have Aaron Rutherford running for the seat in Inilnik.
So this is a ward where we have an incumbent, and that's always an uphill battle for any candidate to run against. So let's hear a bit more about this ward. Sam, you live there.
I live there.
Is it busy? Is there a lot of candidates running?
It's not certainly not the most crowded ward. We have five candidates in total, two of whom are women. So we have Bev Esslinger and Aaron Rutherford represented in this ward. And as you said before, it's, you know, Bev Esslinger is the incumbent. She was a school board trustee before that. So she's very well known in the Edmonton community. She's a bit of a, you know, a little bit of a stalwart on council. So, I mean, you're right. It's one of those cases where if our end goal is to have more women on council, going in with an incumbent is certainly a good starting point, but it doesn't mean that she doesn't have some like really hot challengers coming in.
Interesting for sure. So let's go to the next ward.
The next ward is Tastawinyiwak. Let me play the pronouncer for that so I don't sound quite so dumb.
Tastawinyiwak.
Amazing. So tell us about this ward, Raja.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. So we have Ianni Girona and Karen Principe running in Tastawinyiwak.
Tastawinyiwak.
Oh, you did it perfectly.
Yeah.
And who was the incumbent in that ward?
Oh, we had John Zadig in that ward. John D. from formerly Ward 3.
And he's a first term counselor, right?
Yes, so, I believe so. So
it's exciting. There's just two female candidates in that ward, and that's in the north end of the city. Let's go to the next ward.
So the next one is Ward Dene.
Easy pronouncer.
We can hear it. Yeah, there we go.
Dene.
Tell us about that, Raja.
Yeah, so we have Lana Palmer and Trisha Velhusen.
Velhusen. And that, again, is in the north side of the city. And who is the incumbent there? Aaron Paquette.
Yeah, Aaron Paquette would be for that area. And I just wanted to circle back to Ianni Girona. She is one of 10 BIPOC women running for city council. She is of Filipino descent. Lana Palmer is also one of them as well.
Amazing. I love that you're keeping those stats, because I think even before the Searching for Izina project, we didn't know those stats. And I remember episode 4, and I really plugged that one a lot. We looked at the history of BIPOC women running in Edmonton. And it's really interesting that I think it went back to 1974 was the very first time a BIPOC woman ran for council. We talked to her about her experience. And that was incredible, because at the time she said, you know, I didn't even know I was blazing new territory. I had no idea that this was new ground in this city. And the fact that even all these years later, 2021, we have still to this day never elected a BIPOC woman to council is just, it needs to be corrected. And I hope this year we make that breakthrough. I think it's going to happen this year because there's 10 and there's some really interesting races. Do you think it's going to happen this year?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's going to happen this year. And I very much hope that it does. And of course, we know that BIPOC women get a bit more scrutiny. They deal with different types of online hate and unfortunately hate at the doors, or things can turn really ugly, but these women have done such a great job of just not getting stuck in the weeds and rising above it all.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And I think the more, so again, doing your research as someone living in one of these wards, looking at who's running and then supporting folks that you really want to see on council so that our city council looks like the city that it represents. We're a city of about 1 million people. More than 50% are women. There's lots of women from all over the world, racialized backgrounds, indigenous, and we need our city council to really have those voices at the table that represent these communities so we just have better decisions. And this is why this project is, if there's a legacy of this project, it's that we've been able to recognize that we have a long way to go on these issues.
I think when we talk about BIPOC women running for council, it's like, it's almost a microcosm or a metaphor for like just the entire concept of intersectionality.
Yes.
In that, you know, when you are a BIPOC woman running for council, you have the stigmatization of being the woman candidate, mm-hmm. and then also, you know, the racialized candidate, and those things compound on top of each other and often like leads to people being ignored when they shouldn't be.
No.
Yeah, and there's also that fear of tokenization when you're running. You don't want to be seen as just the woman of color running, just the woman who's running. And what's been interesting is that these candidates are being asked specific questions like, why is diversity important? Being asked questions about their race when really all candidates should be asked those questions. And especially, I think, the white male candidates who historically have represented city council, it should be asked of them why diversity and diversity of opinion is important.
So you heard that. If you're running in this election, and I agree with you 100%, Raja, all candidates need a great answer to that question, because it's really essential that this is, everyone's carrying that question in their heart and that they're thinking about ways that they can open the city up and make it more welcoming and inclusive for all. And just to have 10 BIPOC women running, I think that's a record. Even though, again, when you look at the entire numbers, 113 total number of candidates and only 10 of those are BIPOC women. It's still a really small number, but it's a start. And I think by the fact that we're shining that bright light on it, we'll keep tracking it. And in future elections, I really am very hopeful that we'll see larger numbers and that women, particularly all women, feel very welcome in this space and that they feel like that they are, that everyone is welcome to run.
You know, especially when you look at that statistic, it's really sad to think about the fact that 10 out of 113, like that's less than 10%. And there's no way that BIPOC women are less than 10% of the population of Edmonton.
1,000%. So yeah, it's not reflective of our population.
Not one
so
bit.
we gotta fix this. So the next ward.
The next ward is right in the heart of the city. We are going to Odemin.
Odemin.
I think this is my favorite because I love the translation as a Cree word for strawberry, and I love that. And it's the heart.
It's Anishinaabe, actually, not Cree.
Sorry. Well, let's correct that. Anishinaabe, and I love it because it's just the heart of the city. And just thinking of the strawberry, it's very visual for me. So in this ward, tell us a bit about who's running, Raja.
Yeah. So in this ward, we have 3 female candidates. We have Gabrielle Batiste, Nima Haley, and Anne Stevenson.
And this is an interesting ward race because of the fact that we don't have an incumbent. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Yeah. So it's interesting because this would have been considered Scott McKean's old ward. But now we have former councillor Tony Katerina running in Odemin this time. So it could somewhat be seen as an open ward, but it's also quite crowded. We have a number of male candidates as well.
So it's really interesting because you've got three female candidates here and then a larger field as well. And it's a bit of an open race, but not really. So yeah, this is complicated. I think on election night, everyone's going to be watching this particular ward because of the fact, again, of all of those factors and the fact that it's the downtown and we've got all of, you know, we're sitting recording live from the Stanley Milner Library. We're right downtown. And COVID has hit our downtown very hard. So I know I've heard a lot from all of the candidates running in this ward about how to keep our downtown really strong. So I know I'm watching this one on election night. I don't know about you guys, but this one I'm really watching closely. Okay, let's go to our next ward.
All right, our next ward is Métis.
Métis.
So tell us about this, Raja. Métis. This one is, isn't it the most crowded of all of the ward races?
It absolutely is. We have 4 female candidates. We have Liz John West, Caroline Matthews, Ashley Salvador, and Corey Longo.
And so there, again, unlike our last ward, this is an open ward. Tell us a bit about why it's open, how crowded it is, and what you see.
Yeah, Ward Métis is really interesting because it's the only ward in the city that crosses the river. It has neighborhoods from up north, you know, Alberta Avenue, Virginia Park, Highlands, and then down south as well. We have Otwell, King Edward Park, and Bonnie Doon.
So that's fascinating. And do you, again, this is on my watch night list, like downtown, I think Métis, everyone's watching that. There are some really interesting candidates. I've seen some really great campaigns. And again, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, go and look and research the campaigns and see some of the stuff that's being done. Because I think at the end of the day, if you really want to help folks, not only volunteering, but the money. Money is really critical right now, donating to campaigns. And so you're going to see some strong races. But what fuels a really strong race is money.
Especially this year, especially in a year where we've had, I mean, some of these candidates, and I kid you not, have been campaigning for a year.
Yes.
I mean, it is, you know, especially in these open races, people have been going at it and the money runs dry really quick. So these, you know, these campaigns often need that little, I think it, like, it doesn't more than just keeping their office open for another couple of weeks. It galvanizes them. It shows that they're supported. It actually shows that like people are behind this candidate enough to actually put some dollars up behind it. Oh, and totally. I think that, you know, just even for the morale of a stressed out, tired campaign, it can do a big difference.
Yeah. Even $5, any money helps on a campaign. It pays for signs. It pays for the office. It pays for your social media ads. It's just, it really even pays for pizza for your volunteers. It really fuels your campaign. And you have to remember that even though you don't have you might not have a ton of money to donate, even that $5 donation goes a long way. And particularly women, female candidates, traditionally we know that they have a harder time fundraising. They don't often have access to the same donor dollars that maybe a male candidate do. And then we have to remember that BIPOC candidates face that barrier as an extra challenge. So keep it in mind. Don't forget about the fact that you can open your wallet, give that $10, and the mileage that $10 can have, or that $5.
Especially when you think about it, you know, a lot of male candidates kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, are part of the old boys club, part of, you know, those groups of influential people in the city that will throw tons of money at a campaign without questioning it. And yeah. And they don't have to fight for their dollars as hard. And it's really sad.
Mm-hmm. And not all male candidates face that have access to dollars, but traditionally they do. And it's often hard for women to ask for money. It's just not, some female candidates we hear over and over. I know Raja and myself, we've heard over and over again that this is always hard to do. It's one of the reasons a lot of women don't step up. So if you want to be proactive and you want to help these candidates, just open your wallet. And if you can't do that, just give your time. Time is so precious and it's so valuable. And if you can go and do a lit drop, which means drop flyers to someone's house or door knock, that is incredible, and it was so valued for campaigns.
Thank you for listening to Searching for Izina. This podcast was made possible thanks to the generous financial support of the Edmonton Community Foundation. We also want to thank the Edmonton Public Library, the City of Edmonton Archives, the Adams Agency, and Ryan Jesperson for the generous use of his Real Talk recording studio. Check out searchingforizina.com for a full list of this project's sponsors, partners, and committee members. Searching for Izina has been largely powered by volunteers from across the capital region, from research to social media to marketing. Volunteers of all ages, backgrounds, and political leanings are helping bring Searching for Izina to life during a pandemic and countless Zoom calls. Thanks to the former and current Edmonton City Councilors who have helped us tell their important stories. Now, back to Searching for Izina.
Let's go to the next ward.
All right, we are going now to Sipi-Winnowak.
Sipi-Winnowak.
I love that. And that is my ward. It is in the West End. I live in Parkview. So Raja, tell us about this ward.
Yeah, in this ward we have incumbent Sarah Hamilton, and we also have Giselle General as our two female candidates.
And this is an interesting, so there, and I think in total there was about four or five candidates in total. Mm-hmm. And it's again in the West End. So we'll see. It's having an incumbent in there is always is a tougher road. It's one of our two female candidates. But we will definitely see the big issues out there for sure. The LRT line that's proposed for that end of the city. And we're always hearing about recycling and just downtown. So I personally am going to be watching that one that night for sure. Next ward.
So the next ward is Papastew.
Papastew.
So this ward, tell us who's running here.
Yeah, so in Papastew, we have Kirsten Goa and Susan Field as our two female candidates. You also may know this ward because it used to be Ben Henderson's ward. So we have a good chunk of Strathcona and Ritchie in there as well.
So it's south of the river.
Yeah.
Ben, who just ran for the Liberals in Millwood. So it's a ward that there's been an incumbent for a very long time. Is it crowded, that race?
We have definitely some big competitors, I think. There's Haroon Ali, who's running there, Michael Jans, and
So it's going to
it's a big race.
I think it's hotly contested.
Yeah.
It's on my list as well. I think every war is on my list. That was interesting because it is being very hotly contested. And I know a lot of time and effort and endorsements are going into that ward. So that's one definitely to watch. Kirsten Goh is going to be, I know she ran in the last election and she's back up. So this will be one I know that people are going to be paying attention to on October 18th.
Yeah.
So next ward.
Next ward, we have Piesowin.
Piesowin.
Russia.
So this one is actually our least crowded race.
Wow.
Yeah, there's only two candidates. One of them is female candidate. Her name is Gisela Perez Arellano. And we have incumbent Tim Carmel running again in his ward.
So, and that's on the south end of the city.
Yes, this is where I grew up.
Okay.
Whoa. So
and that is, he's a first term counselor as well. So a lot of first. Okay. So I'm surprised two. Is that the least? Is that the only race where there's only two candidates running? Do we know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the only one.
Wow. Interesting. Next ward.
The next ward is Ipi Kokani Piotsi.
Ipi Kokani Piotsi.
Awesome. So this one, again, is in the south side of the city. Three female candidates. We have Rhiannon Hoyle, Glynis Lieb, and Jennifer Rice.
And there's no incumbent here?
No incumbent in this one.
And was that Michael Walters or was it what is a bit of...
Yeah, it would have been Michael Walters' old ward.
And so all of them are first time, obviously running for the female candidates first time, and they've all got very impressive resumes. So that's going to be a very interesting war to watch on election night.
Absolutely.
Three women that have come from very distinguished backgrounds, and we'll be able to see, you know, it's interesting to watch that ward because of the fact they've, you know, it's a crowded, I think it's very much like Métis where it's quite crowded, but the female candidates are really standing out quite early as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're really benefiting from the lack of incumbent in this one as well. It's, you know, as we talked about earlier in the episode, I mean, it's hard to get noticed to begin with, but you know, there's a lot of times in election, if there's an incumbent, especially a popular incumbent, they just suck all the oxygen out of the room. Yeah. And like everybody else is just kind of, you know, vying for second place. And you know, we can see some real breakthroughs in wards like this, where we don't have somebody necessarily holding that mantle.
And that's what I'm so hopeful we'll have. And I'm always an optimist. I think because there's so many open races this time, I think we do have a real, real shot at gender parity for the first time since 1989. We've had it once. It was 1989. Again, we've established Raja wasn't even born yet. Sam was very young. I was just starting high school. I think Love Shack was at the top of the charts when that happened.
So we're getting, it's a long time.
It's a long time ago that we've had gender parity. And so we've had it once. But I think this election, because of these open races, there is a real possibility. So again, this isn't just a hope. There's actually there's a real chance that we can do this, that we can have at least half of our counselors are female. And that's so important when it comes to making really good decisions as a council. And when you listen to all these races, I actually get more hopeful, like going through this like this. Raja, aren't you like, oh yeah, there are so many open races that we can actually do this, but it's going to take an electorate that's ready for it and that's going to back candidates that are not only really, you know, just incredible people, but that you're backing them with your money, your time, and your efforts so that they get elected on October 18th. Because it's not enough to want it. You have to really make it work as an electorate. Let's go to the next ward.
The next ward is Garahio.
Garahio.
Wow, you weren't even close on that one.
I was not even close.
Not even close, but I love that. That's a great pronunciation. Tell us about this ward, Raja.
Yeah, so we have Karen Tang and Shamir Turner running in this ward as our two female candidates in Garahio. And we've seen Karen Tang run before. Shamir is a newcomer to running for city council, but they have both been very, very strong in this race.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to watch it for sure. I've seen both their campaigns. I'm really impressed by both of their campaigns. And it's also an open ward because the councilor was there. He has stepped down and he's running for mayor. So that's an open ward. There is no incumbent. Is it a really crowded race, or is it one of those races where it's not as crowded as, say,
Not as crowded, I think. Actually, this is one of the wards where I definitely think the female candidates are the ones to watch. They're the ones to beat, really.
Really? Wow. So that is that. You heard it here first. Raja's right. So I think that's one where, again, if you're going to invest your time and your money, look at that race for sure. Nick's ward.
Okay, so our final ward is Spomitapi.
Spomitapi.
So we have Joanne Wright as our only female candidate running here. But what I find incredibly interesting about this ward is that we have such a diversity of candidates running. A lot of them have Punjabi backgrounds or are very much involved within the community. We do have an incumbent running here. We have Mo Banga running again. And it's a crowded race again.
Yeah. Where is this in the city for people who don't know where this is?
This is the deep south of the city. Think Tamarack, think Summerside.
So it's down there. And they're getting a new LRT, that the LRT that's just about to open up, that running down to that end of the city.
Oh, yeah. So big changes. It's a very big community. It's very sprawled out, but we're also seeing, you know, a lot of families move to those areas as well.
So is that the last ward? That is the last ward. So let's talk a bit about those calls to action. We've talked a little bit about, okay, now you've heard about who's running. Again, I really hope that anyone's listening today will go to the websites of the candidates or go to the City of Edmonton website to look at the names so that you can do your own research. But it's really exciting. We're seeing a record number of women running. The last time that we saw a record was in 2017 when there was 24 women who put their name on the ballot. And we have to look back 100 years ago to when the first woman was elected in our city. And that, again, was Izina Ross. She was the reason for this project. She's the reason we all came together, because it was 100 years ago on December 12th of this year. So 100 years later that she won. She only ran for a week because nomination day closed and she ran. She had a 1 week campaign and she won. She just squeaked in. I think she was the last candidate to squeak in on that ballot. And she kind of was that political trailblazer that has led us 100 years later. Boy, we have come so far, but boy, have we so much work to do to come a bit further. And Raja, when you look at the names and the numbers of this campaign, of this current election, are you hopeful? Are you depressed? Like, where are you right now when you think about the 2021 election?
I'm definitely feeling very hopeful. Also a bit tired. It's been a long election season.
Yes.
One that's been overwhelming, but also municipal elections and municipal politics is so exciting to me because it is that most local form of government. You get into the little things like what really affects your everyday life in your neighborhood. Think about your buses, transit, library, your parks, your amenities. So everything is felt very deeply and personally at this level.
It's the level of government that impacts your life on the most daily basis. You know what I mean? It's local politics. And it's also, you know, by and large, nonpartisan. I mean, I don't know how you guys are feeling, but we just had a snap federal election. And I think that throughout that entire thing, like, there was a very big part of me that's kind of going like, well, can we just get this thing over with so we can get back to the more interesting election? Because that's, you know, I've been following the municipal election so closely and with a lot of vigor and frankly with a lot of excitement and having the partisan tribalness that is a federal election just parachuted into the middle of that kind of, you know, it really sort of sucked the wind out of the sails for a moment.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. And it's nice that we're back and we refocus on this election, because not only we just have all these open races, but having a mayoral race that is open is we haven't seen this since 2013. So it's really energizing. And I think it's exciting to not only talk about the future of our city, but also looking for those new voices, those fresh voices that are going to help build that new city post-COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I want to wind this down because we've gone through the races. But before we do, I want to talk about the project, because we are, you know, our next episode is going to be on December 12th. We are going to be holding a live summit. It was supposed to be this weekend. I'm so sorry for our listeners. We were planning to have it at the end of September, but because of the rising COVID numbers and the hospitalizations, we postponed it. So our last episode will be a live recording at the library, at the Stanley A. Milner Library. Go to the searchingforizina.com website for more information. But what has this project meant to you, Raja? I also want to talk to you, Sam, about what this project's meant to you. And what do you hope that long term kind of legacy is of this project. We've been at it for more than a year in a pandemic, doing a research project in the middle of a pandemic. What's it meant for you?
It's been really great to connect with you, Catherine, and everyone at the YWCA, everyone at Parity, all the amazing volunteers that have put in their time to research this part of our history that is largely unknown. There is no way I would have known about this otherwise, really. Yeah. And that is the case for a lot of people in Edmonton. They wouldn't have known who Izina was or the story of Izina. And it's really wonderful. Catherine and I, we get to drop in City Hall School and give presentations to kids who have very deep and personal questions about what they can do to fight gender inequality. And it's a good time capsule, really, to leave behind for people to listen to.
Sam, what's it meant to you? I mean, we brought you into this project. You had no idea what you were getting yourself into in the middle of a pandemic, I keep saying. What's it meant to you?
It first of all just appealed to, like I said before, the municipal politics nerd in me. So, I mean, that in and of itself really sort of galvanized my excitement for this project. Part of me thinks that, I mean, we talk a little bit about how people sort of retreated into doing a COVID project and doing something that can be a meaningful thing that they put forward in all this sort of time that we have right now. And I'm actually really, like, I have to wonder sometimes if this project would have had as much meaning or as much impact if we had been going about our normal lives for it. You know, we had the time to do more research. We had the time to really dig into these stories more. We had the time and the willingness to connect with people on Zoom so that we could do things like have an interview in Africa,
yes,
and an interview in India on, yeah, this project, and show that, you know, the women that have been or tried to be part of Edmonton City Council don't just have an impact in this city, but there's actually like a real global footprint that we can have. And I think that that's something that we can really be proud of. And the other thing that, you know, I mean, like we said, we were supposed to, I should be setting up right now for the live event this weekend, but, you know, the silver lining in this is we get to do it literally on the 100th anniversary of Izina Ross's historic victory. And I think that that's also something that is just, you know, it wasn't the way that we wanted to do the project, but certainly it's going to be just wonderful being able to mark time and kind of give that event the, you know, the recognition that it deserves, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, for me personally, I've been in awe of just all of the volunteers who have stepped up over this last year. You know, Parity YAG volunteers, YWCA volunteers, just volunteers in our community, EPL volunteers. When I was a little girl, I grew up in a small community, a little farming community. And every fall when women were getting married or having babies, the women would gather in our community and always do a quilt. And I remember I would walk into my grandma's basement and I would watch women come and go and build this beautiful quilt for someone, often a stranger, for an event. And I would just see the beauty of this, and people would come and go. And I feel like this is very similar to me, because we've had to build stories in isolation and on Zoom calls and like conversations, like we'd be calling Africa and India, and like just we'd be kind of coming and going and gathering these stories. And after a year, we look back and have just the beauty of this story that is still very incomplete, unfortunately, because of the fact we have so far to go. But I'm very inspired by the women who have come before us, and I'm very inspired by the women who want to step up and lead in the middle of a pandemic. And there's so much beauty in that. And also just the time that people have given this project is really inspiring. So I want to thank you, Raja. I want to thank Parity YAG for that time. I really want to thank you, Sam, for stepping up to help with the production of this, and all of the other volunteers with Stacy and Kim Ann, our co-hosts who have helped tell this story, and all of the female counselors who have led over the last 100 years. There's been 31. I hope we've done you justice. I hope that we have told your stories in a way that respects and honors the work that you did. And I hope that work inspires so many people that you know that you can step up, and that there's a community in Edmonton here to support you. I've lived in many places around the world, and I don't think there's a place like Edmonton where you can do a project like this. So thank you. And if you're listening and you helped with any way in this project, I hope you feel that you are very thanked for the work that you've done. So with that, I want to thank you, Raja. I want to thank you, Sam. I hope that you've learned a lot about 2021, the election that we're going to have on October 18th. Go out and vote, but most of all, go out and help a candidate in your ward. Find someone that inspires you. Give them their time. Give them your money. Do your research and help build the city, because we've got a lot of work to do. And if you really want to celebrate this project, on December 12th, we will be gathering at the Stanley A. Milner Library. Go to the searchingforizena.com website for more information in the coming days and weeks. Sign up and just be part of this. I don't think this project will end on the day of December 12th. I think that the legacy of this project is that we really keep inspiring particularly women and gender minorities to step up and run in our city, and not only run but win, and that's exciting. So until next time, keep searching for Azina. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on December 12th.
You've been listening to Searching for Azina, brought to you by YWCA Edmonton, Parity Yeag, and several past and present Edmonton City Councillors. New episodes from our 9-part podcast are released the third Tuesday of every month until October. Please check our show notes, social media, and searchingforizena.com for more information about this project and how you can get involved. Share this with your friends and family and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, keep searching for Azina.